St. Red, My Aim is True by Jordan D. White. Episode 4, Blame It on Kane.
The sword was about halfway through Red's chest when he realized what had happened. Red, who, as far as saints go, was still a bit green, had allowed himself to be captured while on a simple reconnaissance mission. He was merely supposed to find out as much as he could about a certain pedophile-come-foe messiah, but he wound up tied to a cross, with that very same pedophile attempting to cut him in half. In the process, he'd lost his very special sword, a holy weapon that could cut through any inanimate object, but would pass through a living thing without harming it at all. The very same sword Father David Patrick was swinging through him. Considering he thought of all this in all of 1 second, Red was fairly impressed that he'd figured it out so quickly. Father Patrick had swung the sword in such a way that it entered Red at his left shoulder and exited around his waist on his right side. As the blade passed out of him, Red could feel the cross start to fall apart. His shirt and jacket, too, had been bisected, and as the arms of the cross fell away, the rope that had bound him to it tugged at his clothes. With his weight no longer being supported by them, a task which now fell to his ankles, bound to the cross's base, he was able to slip out of his sleeves, which fell away with the cross's arms to the floor. Father Patrick's swing was just finishing its arc as Red, falling over forwards, grabbed his gun from its invisible holster and shot through the ropes restraining his feet. Free from the cross, he rolled with the fall and, landing on his back, immediately pointed the gun at the stunned priest. Red felt the overwhelming urge to say, "Drop your weapon and come along peacefully," but since his mouth was still duct tape, he remained mute. For one split second, they remained exactly in that position, Red aiming his gun at Patrick, Patrick too stupefied to react, and the entire church full of onlookers unable to lift their jaws off of their little flip-up kneeling benches. But then Patrick sprang back into action. He swung the sword around in his hand and plunged it down towards Red. Red's left hand shot forward, palm first, towards the sword, colliding hard with the hilt of the blade, stopping it dead, its blade hidden in his arm. Red was close enough now to make out Patrick's face, even without his glasses. As such, he savored the priest's expression as Red yanked the sword out of his grasp and spun it around so he was holding it normally, careful not to actually touch the blade to Patrick, spoiling his magic. The pistol still constantly trained on Patrick's head, Red slowly made his way to his feet and slipped the sword into its invisible sheath, causing the crowd to gasp as it disappeared. Red tore the duct tape off of his mouth. After a moment of stretching his face muscles to rid them of the pain, he said, "You see the truth now. This man's a liar. It is I who am blessed by God. Yes, God does protect his holy. How else could that blade have passed through me without leaving a scratch?"
"He lies. It was a trick. He..."
"Oh, yeah?" said Red, pushing his gun right up to Patrick's head. "Well, is it a trick you know? Because I'd love to see you try it." He assumed that Patrick didn't know about his weapon's special properties. If he had, why would he try to use Red's sword to kill him? Red was bluffing. The gun could no more hurt Patrick than could a dirty look, but it paid off as Patrick put his hands over his head.
"Stay back, my people! Do not come any closer! God will protect his only son!"
"Oh, will you give it a rest? If I hear one more peep out of you, your head's going to be far more holy, if you catch me." Red crouched down, his pistol still trained on the priest, and ruffled through his clothing. He pulled out the two halves of his glasses, and ripping the strip of duct tape that had gagged him, he fixed them and put them on. Now able to see exactly how many people were out there looking at him, Red nervously grabbed Patrick around the neck and began backing them towards the doorway to the rest of the building. "Sorry, folks, but I'm afraid your local child molester has got to say goodbye now. I recommend you get your children therapy and, I don't know, convert to Protestantism. Oh, and don't follow us!" At this point, Red was more than a little impressed with himself. He couldn't even remember being in a fist fight ever, and here he was pulling off some pretty impressive combat tricks. Another blessing, he thought to himself, doing his best to maneuver the halls of the church. "Which way is out?" he asked Patrick, jerking him hard by the neck. Patrick gestured toward a door. Red pushed Patrick into the door, hard enough to open it. A van had been backed up to the same hatch the frogs had been dumped into. The back doors of the van were open, revealing a large machine. One tube from the machine snaked down into the frog chamber. Another was pointed up in the air. Two guys for whom Red could think of no description more fitting than henchmen were standing around the van. They pulled guns but did not move towards them. Red shivered, the winter air a bit cold for a topless man. His nipples stung. "Don't move, or this sick bastard gets it," he shouted. The pair did nothing. "Okay, climb down there."
"With the frogs?"
A large number of the creatures were gone, no doubt used in the plague, but the entire floor of the room was still covered with them. "You heard me."
"Oh, come on. Those things are filthy."
"Just do what he says."
One of the henchmen pulled the tube out of the hatch, and they both climbed down within.
Oh, man. Oh, you have no idea how disgusting this is.
Don't bet on it. Now drop your guns.
Oh, come on now.
Just be glad I'm not having you stick your heads down there. With a sigh, they dropped their guns to the floor, the hopping mass swallowing them from sight. Around this time, people had begun to emerge from the church hall. Red quickly closed up the back of the van after pushing the frog shooter back within, then shoved Patrick in the passenger side door. Move over, he said. You're driving. Red buckled his seatbelt. Patrick started to do the same, but Red stopped him. No thanks, he said. I don't want you trying anything stupid.
You're not going to get away with this.
He started the car with keys that had been left in the ignition. You know what? Red said. That's my line. I'm the good guy. I don't need to get away with anything. I didn't do anything wrong. Now step on it. Patrick shook his head and obeyed. The van took off, the sound of frogs crunching under their wheels as they weaved through the parking lot. Argento had been watching Moulin Rouge for the nth time, crying like a baby as Ewan McGregor and Nicole Kidman sang their love for one another, when Red burst into the room and threw Father Patrick on the floor of their hotel room.
What the hell is this?
One Father David Patrick, positively confirmed child molester and most assuredly not the second coming of Christ, although he does have some sort of mojo working.
Please help me! It's crazy!
Shut up, you! Said Red, pointing his gun at Patrick again.
Perfect idiot! Do you have any idea what you've done?
Yeah. I've captured a delusional pedophile with plans to start a holy war.
Moron!
He turned off the television and started pacing around, looking down at Patrick, who had rolled over on his back and was looking up in fear at the both of them.
Do you have anything we could use to tie him up?
Yeah, I found this in the van. He pulled a roll of duct tape out of his pocket and tossed it to Argento.
All right, let's get him subdued.
The two of them rolled Patrick back onto his stomach.
Oh, please. Oh, do keep quiet! I am trying to think!
They taped his wrists together behind his back, his legs together at the ankles, and hoisted him into the comfortable chair in the corner.
Just let me go. I promise I won't start a holy war.
Argento picked up the duct tape and pressed an ample piece over Patrick's mouth.
Sit down, Red. Now, tell me exactly what happened.
Red proceeded to do just that. When he finished, he sat there satisfied. Argento turned away from him for a moment. After a quiet second, he turned back around, face red, and shouted,
"You're the biggest fool saint I've ever had the displeasure of meeting!"
What are you talking about? I stopped the bad guy! I caught him! I brought him in!
First of all, it was not your assignment to capture him. You were supposed to investigate the allegations. At best, you could have saved the children.
Hey, those children were more interested in welcoming me into their fold than being saved.
It doesn't matter. It's not your job. You're in interventions. You're supposed to defend the innocent and prevent bad things from happening, not judge the wicked or punish them. That's what retribution is for. All you were supposed to do was get information.
He had me crucified in front of his parish and was trying to kill me.
It should never even have gotten to that point.
Besides, he was going to start a holy war even if he hadn't caught me. Now he can't do that.
No, now his followers will start it when they come after us either to rescue him or to get revenge. Great plan.
Red started to talk back to him, but he found he had nothing to say. He looked down at his feet.
You have to think these things through. There are rules. There are procedures to follow. You're not a superhero. You're an employee of a very powerful, very holy organization. And as such, you have a responsibility. A responsibility to our superiors and to the greatest superior of all.
This is total bull. I mean, I was just trying to do the right thing.
Perhaps the only saving grace of your actions. That and the fact that it was your first mission, after all. Those are almost designed to fail.
Red threw himself on the bed. So what do we do now?
We call Hayden and let him know what's happened. Then we do whatever he tells us to.
But I didn't do anything wrong.
It doesn't matter. We have to do things by the book. And right now the title of that book is Call It In.
Argento pulled out his cell phone and let himself out of the room. Red didn't really like that book. After an hour of driving with nothing but 80s flashback for distraction, Red almost considered it an involuntary action when he finally shot out his hand and turned off the radio, especially at the prospect of 5 more hours of it. Jesus Christ, he said. Aren't you going to say anything to me ever again? Argento was sitting in the passenger seat, his arms folded. It was dark outside, black masses of trees speeding by, a sea of red dots in front of them and white ones behind. With radio off, the only sound was that of the heater on high. I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry I screwed everything up. I'm sorry we're stuck driving instead of being home by now. I'm sorry if you get in trouble because of it or whatever. I'm just sorry.
You don't have to apologize.
Well, if I made Hayden yell at you...
Hayden doesn't yell. That's what makes it so unpleasant to disappoint him. You can tell he's very disappointed.
Well, I'm sorry for that, then.
It's okay. I told you. First missions almost always fail. I mean, they don't expect you to die or anything, but they'll know you'll screw it up somehow. They'll figure you'll learn more from your mistakes than from training. I thought it would be different with you.
Why different with me?
Because you... I don't know, just a feeling, I suppose. At any rate, you shouldn't apologize. You were right, you tried your best. You did what you thought was right, and for the most part it worked out. We're just stuck with this fool for a while.
He gestured to the back of the van. Trying his best not to be thrown around too much was Father David Patrick. Still fully taped up, he was laying up against his frog-shooting device, glaring at the pair in the front seats. Every once in a while, Red and Argento's bags would fall over onto him. Where are we taking him?
The nearest rechristening facility is in Ohio.
No, I mean, what is that?
One of the punishments retributions doles out. Usually it involves giving the person a new name or life. Sometimes we'll leave all that intact, but just change their outlook on life. Not sure what they'll do with this bastard. If I had to guess, I'd say they'll just change his mind, make him a normal priest so he can go back to the flock and calm them down.
So why are we driving?
Because you stole his van.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. You had good intentions, and I suppose that's what really mattered. It makes you more effective as well.
What do you mean?
Ah, yes. Well, as I said, they don't want things to go perfectly on your first mission, so they don't tell you everything about your sainthood. For example, as long as you're doing the right thing, the holy thing, your abilities will be better than usual. It's a built-in safeguard to prevent anyone who has been chosen from going renegade, using their abilities for their own purposes, greed and whatnot.
Has that ever happened?
Of course not. We told you, people like working for us. We only choose those that we think are worthy, and we don't allow for mistakes in that process. If you've been chosen, it's going to work out, one way or another.
Red frowned. He saw a rest stop approaching. You hungry?
I could eat.
All right. He pulled the van into the entrance of the rest area. There was a gas station and a McDonald's. Red steered them over towards the drive-thru. There was a line of cars. I figured we should eat in the car because of you-know-who. He gestured to the rear again. Should we get him anything?
I suppose we should. It's a long drive. What do you want back there? Big Mac?
Mm-mm.
Nuggets?
Mm-hmm.
There you have it. I guess I'll feed him after I finish.
Unless you want to turn driving. The idea of taunting Patrick with his food appealed to Red.
It's quite all right.
They pulled up to the menu.
Can I help you?
Yeah, I'll get a number 2 plain with ketchup, a number 4, and what do you want?
A Big Mac.
And a number 1.
What would you like to drink with that?
Coke's okay, Red asked. A racket sprung up from the back. Okay, settle down. Diet Coke? The noise quieted down. 2 Cokes and 1 Diet.
That'll be $13.86. Please drive around.
Red pulled them forward about a foot behind the line of cars between them and the windows. Argento took out his wallet and pulled out a 20. So, how did you like Moulin Rouge?
It was excellent. I don't think there was ever a film like it.
Yeah, maybe visually, but the script?
The script wasn't important. It was a series of love songs brought to life against the most interesting visuals in years.
But it was so predictable, said Red, pulling them forward a car's length.
Of course it was predictable. They tell you exactly what's going to happen right at the beginning. He says she's going to die, then when he tells the story of the musical they're writing, it's the plot of the movie.
And you don't think that's retarded?
No, I think it's clever.
Argento's cell phone started to ring.
Hold on a minute. Argento?
The car's pulled forward again.
$13.86.
What kind of problem?
Red took the 20 out of Argento's hand and passed it to the girl.
$6.14 is your change.
Oh my god.
Please pull forward to the next window.
Red put the change into the drink holder next to him and pulled forward as far as he could.
Of course. We'll go right away.
What's going on? Red asked. Argento tersely held up his index finger to silence him. Red sighed. What else is new? He said under his breath.
She's what? How is that possible?
His jaw remained open as he fell silent for a few moments. The car in front of them drove away and Red pulled up to the final window.
All because of...
Here are your drinks!
Red pulled out the additional cup holders in the dash, then he took the drinks from a young man with green hair sticking out from his blue company-issued visor.
Why would she kill herself? She was always so much more... I see.
Hey, which one is the diet?
I'm not sure, sorry!
It's okay.
It'll just be a minute on your food!
All right, said Red, sipping the first cup of soda. Regular, he said to himself.
But she doesn't even remember him.
Ugh, diet! He put down the second cup. How can you drink that stuff?
If you think that's the best plan.
The window opened as the green-haired boy returned.
Would you like any sauce for your nuggets?
No thanks, said Red, causing a ruckus from the rear of the van.
How much should I tell Kane?
All right, barbecue. How about telling me everything? The noises continued. Argento covered the mic on his phone.
Red, please.
He removed his hand.
Yes, sir, of course.
Patrick was still thumping about. Make that sweet and sour. The noise ceased.
Is everything all right back there?
Asked the boy. Yeah, it's fine.
I understand, sir.
Here are your sandwiches and fries. Nuggets are almost done.
No problem.
Not a problem, sir. We can handle it. Yes, sir. No, sir. God bless you as well, sir.
Argento hung up his phone. He stared ahead for a moment. Well? Are you going to tell me what the hell is going on this time, or is it company policy to keep everything under wraps at all times?
We're not going to be able to make it to the rechristening center right now.
Why not?
We have to go to New York.
Why, do they have a better one there?
Well, yes, but that's not it. Something has come up.
So we're going to drive to New York? The city, you mean?
Yes.
Where are we going to stop for the night, then? Ohio is about halfway, I think.
We're not. This is important.
We have to drive straight through? Well, we'll have another 12 hours at least.
It doesn't matter. This is important. The two of us will have to drive in shifts, taking turns sleeping.
And we'll have to drag this chump along the whole way.
What part of this is important, don't you understand?
What could be so important that we need to drive for 15 hours straight with a pedophile tied up in the back of a stolen van?
If we don't, the world will end, all right? The world is going to end, and it's because of you.
Red turned back to his left to see the green-haired boy staring at them. Red snatched the bag from his hands. I didn't do anything wrong, he said, and drove off. End of episode 4.